Type Radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Imagine It conference in Bologna. It's November 29, 2008. And our guest is Henning Brehm. Welcome.
Hello.
You're a graphic designer and you work for motion pictures, mainly. Where did you get your education?
I studied graphic design very old-fashioned way at an art school in Hamburg. That was leading me towards advertisement agencies that are very popular in Hamburg. But I was always interested in many fields of design, not only advertisement. I was interested in packaging and editorial design, web design, and I worked as a freelancer in several agencies in Berlin. I moved to Berlin 10 years ago, and working for different agencies and in different fields of design more or less every week or every month. That gave me the idea to name my website Design Tourist, and since around 10 years ago, I call myself Design Tourist.
And how did the opportunity arise to work for the film industry?
That really happened by accident. A friend of mine, who is now one of my partners, his name is Jan, he's a graphic designer as well. He was asked if he wanted to create fake products for a daily soap, for a soap opera TV show that is very popular in Germany. It's been going on for 14 years now. It's called Good Times, Bad Times, Gute Zeiten, Schlechte Zeiten in German. And he asked me to join in, and the job was to create fake products because the TV show can't do and doesn't want to do any product placement. So we started designing products and newspapers and magazines for that show for 2 days a week.
Do you what is the process like? Do you, for example, if you find a product that you really like and you would like to use, do you make slight changes or do you reinvent the entire product?
We have to create products that are unique. So we don't make, when I say we make fake products, it always sounds like that we change a Coca-Cola label into something else, but it still looks like Coca-Cola. You can still recognize the label that we change. That's not the aim. The aim is that we create unique products that fit into a range in a supermarket, for example. We think of a name that is different from existing names, and we create something that is believable and could be sold in a supermarket. But it's not a brand that you know or that you would recognize.
And how are you briefed? By what's your brief?
Our brief is the script. So for that daily show, we... because it's a bit like in a factory. They produce 25 minutes of film every day, so we can't read the script every day. We get a list of things that the prop masters or the set decorators need on the set. That can be like two beer bottles, a bottle of champagne, two newspaper issues, and a movie poster, for example. And we worked on that for a day, and the next day that's on camera. And on the second day we get another list of things that are needed for the next day, and so on. And for films, it is a bit different. We start working like 3 months before the shooting. We read the script, and together with set decorators, prop masters, the production designer, and also the director, we think of how rooms could look like and how they are outfitted with products, for example. So I would add my little graphic design detail to a set.
And do you have a lot of corrections or not? Do they comment on the work that you do, or?
Normally, I'm pretty safe in what I do. It means that if I would provide the set with a couple of posters, for example, or stuff for the background, let's say, I know in which direction the graphic design has to go, and normally there are no changes. If it gets to something that is really close on camera, and sometimes we have directors or production designers that are very keen on something very special that is important for the story, for example, like a headline in a newspaper, including a photograph of the actor with, another actor telling a part of a story. And they really focus on that. They sometimes, you know, wish to see several layouts, and then they some directors get very picky about details, and some are very easy and convinced. So if most of the props that we provide, it's more the question if it's wrong or right, if it's believable or if it's not believable. It's not too much about, like, in the design world you or in typography, you can have endless discussions about the form of the A in comparison to the O and to the T. It's not about that. It's more about wrong or right.
And is there an existing film that you have wished that you could have worked on?
There's a few films that I saw over the last years that I really liked in terms of graphic design in the back. I can't really tell you which one. I love the Romeo and Juliet. I loved Amelie. It was very rich in set decoration, and maybe not too much in graphic design, but I can't remember too many films yet, no.
And isn't it frustrating that you the way you work on the design is like really elaborate, and you go into every detail of the design, making the design sort of in balance. And then it's hardly, what I saw in your talk, in your presentation, it's like the camera goes over that and it sort of mainly falls. So it's like in the background, out of focus, and it's hardly visible, although it's still a part of the movie, of course, and it sets the atmosphere. But isn't it frustrating now and then that sort of there's not more focus to these things you design?
Yeah, it is a very typical question, and sometimes I sit in the movies and it's exactly my question: what did I do that for? As a designer, I have to say the parts when I'm researching and designing, that's what I really like, and I really enjoy developing a set together with architects and production designers and set decorators. So creating a good picture with my little graphic design details, that's very challenging. I can't really tell in advance what will be seen of my work in the films. There's so many possibilities that stuff disappears. It can disappear in the set. Can be, you know, most of the stuff is aged, so painted, for example, signage then completely disappears. It looks good when you're on set, you can have a look at it, but the camera might have a total different perspective, so it might not even be in the picture when it's filmed. If it's filmed, it can be cut out at the end because the editor, I don't know, chooses to, yeah, to cut before the camera catches the sign. I know that directors and especially actors have an easier life on the set if the set is complete, if it's believable. Mm-hmm. So they go on set and they know, they can imagine better that they are, I don't know, in Moscow. They were in the trailer for 3 hours, were really bored, and then they have to go on set, and that has to work. And then they can act good.
And are you on set a lot of the time?
Yeah. No, I'm never on set. I won't say never. I'm sometimes on set because I'm curious. I want to see how people act in that set that we have created. And normally we work like a few weeks or a couple of days in advance before the shooting crew comes there. But the whole picture is complete the minute before they start shooting. And but then I leave. I have to prepare the next set, and being on set, to be honest, is really boring sometimes.
So you don't have all your friends going, can you please get me an autograph? Or,
No. I went to set to see a few people acting. Like, I wanted to see Matt Damon acting. I wanted to see John Goodman, how he changes in front of the camera. And they really change a lot. It's like you see him outside the set, like, okay, that's a great actor. I don't know. I don't believe that. And then the light goes on and they said action, and wow, there he goes. He really is a different person then. But to be there all day, it's too, I don't know, it's too time consuming. It's really boring.
And it's like the actors themselves always say that it's like, well, it's 90% waiting and 10% action, actually. So I can imagine it'd be boring to just spend time there.
And is there a difference in the way you approach design from the fake, for example, fake design you do for the fake design you do for the films to if you're working on a sort of real project?
I haven't been working on the same things in real world. There's only a few things that I do today and that I can really compare. Before I started working for films, I worked in the real world, so I know how it works in the real world. But in for films, products, for example, sometimes have to look odd, and that's a challenge to make products that look odd. In real life, if you get a brief for designing a new beer label, for example. And the brief would say you have to create something absolutely unique. It has to be, if you go to a supermarket, it has to jump in your face. You have to see it from far away. And you would create, let's say, a red beer label, which is uncommon. Or a neon yellow one, let's say. And in real life, it will work. It would look, you could design it. So everyone, you get in every newspaper, every magazine picks it out. The advertisement is great. People love it because people see it from far away. If you design that for a film, it would look wrong.
But isn't it supposed to imitate real life?
If it would be common to have several neon and red beer labels, you could copy that for a film. But if people are not used to it, you would have to stick to the cliché, to the existing cliché, and reproduce that for the film.
So it's not, you're not really recreating reality. Well, you are recreating reality, but it's not really like actually copying stuff, but you take elements from different labels and put them all, mix them up, and distill something that's really your own.
Yeah, I always search for the cliché. If it comes to beer labels, for example, I look at all the existing labels. I have to create a German beer label, let's say, and normally I have them all in mind. If I don't have them, on my internal hard drive, so to say, or I can't find them in the net, I go to the supermarket and just absorb the cliches and then create another one that could fit between the others.
So. When you travel around, do you spend a lot of time in supermarkets?
Yeah, I spend more time in supermarkets than in any church or museum.
Yeah?
Yeah. My girlfriend sometimes gets a bit bored. She says, okay, you go to the supermarket, I go to the museum.
So which country has the best supermarkets for you?
It has changed a lot over the years. Globalization, has been on its way, and I'm really sad about that. I'd love the Eastern European supermarkets in Poland and in Russia, but you find the same products everywhere now. And I just went to Japan, and Japan still is different. And I love that packaging. I could have bought everything.
But isn't the attraction in Japan and other Eastern countries not that you can't read the signs, you can't read the characters, which also makes it really exotic, and
yeah,
you look at it more in an abstract way.
Yeah, I only look at the shapes of the letters. That's true.
Does it make a big difference if you're designing for example, a package that you're familiar with, a German beer, to in comparison to a Japanese one? Is it a lot harder, or does it make a difference for you?
It is more difficult to design something that you don't really understand. So if you have to create a name, and that's what we always start with, it is easier, of course, if I have a German or, let's say, an English or French product, because I understand the language. If I have to come up with a Japanese name, I need to understand how packaging is named. Is it named after the let's say after the content of the product, or does it have a poetic name, for example? And getting translation is not that difficult, but you know, to get a feeling for how you name a product.
How do you inform yourself about that? Those kinds of questions.
I ask people.
So yeah. For the Japanese or the Thai products, then you would ask somebody to give you a good view.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people from all over the world living in Berlin. I have a few people that can help me out with Russian stuff or Japanese or Arabic. It's really handy.
Mm. Yes, because you mentioned that you could read Russian, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
It's not that difficult.
Yeah, but do you understand what you're reading?
Well, the Cyrillic alphabet is not that tricky. Mm-hmm. It's you can learn it pretty easy, and I was always interested in foreign languages, in foreign letters like Arabic, Thai, Japanese. I got so far that I can read the Cyrillic alphabet. I can't read Japanese.
Do you understand what you're reading then, or is it just phonetic?
Yeah, it is phonetic, and many words are based on Latin.
Okay.
Supermarket means supermarket. It is written different. But if you like, it's like someone changed the letters, and if you reorder that, if you know that our or that their S looks like our C, you can read the word supermarket.
And if you, for example, had to work on a film based in the future, how would you approach that without having references of the past? Or is it always references that you use? Mm.
I just worked on a science fiction movie. It is called Pandorum. The film is coming out next year. It has Dennis Quaid and Ben Foster in it. So it was an international film, but a German production company, German director. And the aim was, we had a British production designer, and he was very keen on typography. So he got two graphic designers in. I worked there with my colleague Alejandro Lecuna from Venezuela, and we had the our job was first to create a typography that we could use all over the spaceship. And the question was, how would letters look like in 500 years? And of course, that's very, very hard to imagine. But we thought that maybe the Chinese influence has got so far that we change the way that we read, you know, from top to bottom, or maybe we read from right to left. And we did some very fancy experiments. We collected all kinds of languages, not only Japanese, also Chinese, Thai, Korean, that looks really nice, by the way. And we mixed that, and we created something that you couldn't really read. You knew it is somehow foreign, but it looks familiar. And then we figured out that the audience sometimes has to read things, so we had to make nameplates, for example, and warning signs. And the audience has to read warning. They have to understand, you know, you must not go through that door without protection, for example. So we ended up recreating that fancy idea back to in English, and readable font. But it has some Asian influence. It looks a bit Chinese. And the words that you had to read were written from left to right, like in English. And some other labels, for example, were written differently. We changed the architecture. We changed it from top to bottom, or in a kind of fancy way. Hard to describe.
If you design advertising and billboards for the films, do you use models?
We use pictures of friends a lot. So and we also do photo shoots with people that agree on that we use their pictures for fake movie posters, for advertisement, and for magazines. And for Speed Racer, for example, we knew that there was a lot of advertisement to be shown somewhere in the background. And we made a photo shoot with crew members, and we photographed them in front of a green screen, like the movie was produced. We asked them to bring a few, costumes or props, wigs, some things to play with, and we photographed them, and then made really, really funny advertisement out of it.
Do you have a favorite product to design?
My favorite products are beer labels, I think. Everything, labels for bottles, let's say, and beer labels in particular. And I also like magazine covers.
And has there ever been a manufacturer of a product that saw a presentation or in a film a product and thought, well, that's a great name for a soda or whatever, and ask you to design it or use the name and or the design for it?
Normally you can't really read the names of the products that we create. If you sit in the audience, you see the product somewhere, but the camera always focuses on the actors, never on the products.
So it will never be as close up and in focus that he can actually respond to something like that.
Not in the film, but we are thinking about doing an exhibition and a book maybe about our fake products, and maybe then I don't know, some company comes up and say we want to buy that name. That would be cool, because the names are normally researched, and we always try to find unique names that are not used for products. So we never register the names, because that is too expensive, because we create like, I don't know, 100 products a year, and that would cost a fortune. And when we create products, you know, we sell a few labels to a film company for a couple of euros only. It's not that we get rich with that. But yeah, if we do a book and someone wants to buy the name, go ahead.
And what is next, apart from designing packaging and fake design in films?
Yeah, the next challenge is for us always the next film. I just started working on a project, a film by Roman Polanski. It's going to be a thriller, and every film has its challenge. It is always depending on the script. If it's a good story, it's really good fun to work on and imagine how it would look like. And I don't know, maybe a couple of more years and then I get bored. We're dreaming about living off our archive. So we fill our archive with lots of labels and magazine covers and everything, but never really can reuse it or resell it. Maybe it's another 10 years that we can start living off the archive.
Do you become like sort of a, as you have train spotters, but like supermarket spotters, where you go, oh, there's a new product, like you go in and I've noticed in the shampoo department something new has come out.
Yeah, I'm kind of picky of, in terms of new products. I always see them. But no, I don't send any people out to to bring me new stuff. But for birthdays and parties, people sometimes bring me stuff from their vacations, like some, I don't know, some special products from Spain or Korea or South Africa or something.
So you have quite a big collection, I can imagine.
Yeah, my kitchen is needs an extra room.
There's also the collection on the website of the different products.
Yeah, I started that because I wanted to display the stuff that I was collecting and bringing from my travels. And I made a few issues about tigers on packaging, for example. Or when I was in Rome, I photographed a lot of bars that are all called bar. So I have a lot of signage that says bar. It was a nice collection. I made an issue about street art that was coming up in Berlin. But, you know, people are publishing books about that. I just made a little website that was in the beginning. But it is very time-consuming, I found out. So that project is a bit on hold.
Personally, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like because of your work, it seems like there's a lot more of a Berlin or a German film industry now. Is that something that's been like growing the last couple of years, or has it always been there?
It has not always been there. It's been, it got more interesting when after the wall came down, and the studio that we work for in Babelsberg, which is a bit outside Berlin, which is in the former East, that got popular in the, I don't know, in the mid-90s maybe, or late-90s, because of, you know, the German staff is good, it's cheaper than the American staff. Berlin is interesting as a location, there's lots of possibilities. You can film in different areas of Berlin and around Berlin and pretend that it's different cities. The studio that we work for, Studio Babelsberg, is located a bit outside Berlin. It's in the former eastern part of Germany. And the studio, I think, became popular mid-end 90s. I don't really know why. It may be because of the German crew is good. There's German money. The crew is a bit cheaper than the US crew. Berlin got interesting for locations. You can film in different areas of the city and pretend that it's another city, like Moscow or whatever. And that's when the American productions came over, like Universal Studios and Warner Brothers, and so it's basically the last 10 years that they made big movies in Babelsberg.
Is there a favorite era that you haven't really worked for or in, which you would like high on your list?
I can't really say. It is very challenging to do historical films. I only did work for a film in the First World War. My colleagues are more specialized in the Second World War. They work for a Quentin Tarantino film at the moment. For Speed Racer, we got a lot of inspiration from the 60s, and we found beautiful objects like racing programs and all sorts of stuff related to cars from the 60s, and we really got into that, so that was really nice. But we tried to transform that into today's objects. It is always depending on the script.
And for Speed Racer, did you also design the cars themselves, or just like?
That's what my colleague Alejandro did. I did the sponsors. The cars were covered with little logos and you know, numbering and everything. And he did the coloring and took care of the numbers. And I did the sponsors and you know, the rest of the billboards and newspapers and logos for the big corporations in that film.
And when it comes to merchandise, do they reproduce your work exactly, or is there again a reinterpretation?
There is a lot of, well, they produce a lot of toys. Mattel produced like little toy cars, Speed Racer toy cars. I don't know how many, like maybe 15. We created 80 or 100 cars, but only a few were produced as toys. On those, the design is pretty similar. There's one exception, which is the evil guy. He is driving for Royalton Industries, and Royalton Industries in the film had as a logo a double R, so it was a registered sign. For marketing, we weren't allowed to do the double R, because they said you can't pretend to have registered a registered sign if you have not. It's a bit bizarre, because in a film, you know, if you show an American president in a film, he's not elected. So what's the point if you didn't register a logo in a film? So, but that was the compromise. They reduced the double R to a single R for the marketing toys. And the cars stayed the same, more or less. There was a collection of Lego cars that I personally admire a lot. And they had a package called the Grand Prix, and they didn't use our advertisement or the sponsor names that we created for the background. So Lego made up his own fake brands for backgrounds.
So that's another area that somebody else you could work for Lego.
No? Yeah, maybe I should offer my service.
But do you get caught up in legal actions a lot? Like because the things that you want to do are not possible, for instance?
I have to get more and more knowledge about it, and I'm sometimes giving lectures about product placement, so I'm pretty much informed about how much you can do product placement wise. But normally we have to work with lawyers. For the big films, there's always a company that takes care of all the rights clearance. Mm-hmm. That's very helpful. I mean, that's a complete different field. So we come up with the names, and they check if the name is somewhere registered.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Time Radio FM. Now we're talking.